For those listening to KSBN Money Talk Radio who might be interested in buying physical precious metals for less than what I can pay for them, stay tuned. I have a way you can support this show and secure what I believe is the best price for precious metals on the existing market. In our first commercial break, I will explain this in more detail. And now, let's get on with Reclaiming the Republic. Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This is G.R. Mobley. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. If you go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, you can download our podcast and support documents and links. This is an educational, grassroots program designed to restoring the Republic and placing the general government, or what many refer to as the federal government, back into the constitutional framework and scope of the Constitution. Our toll-free number here to call in is 844-320-4299. Again, 844-320-4299. I know that I've said this every time, and I'll say it again. Many parts of these shows refer to previous shows, and these shows build off of each other. So to stay abreast or to keep up with the content and make sure that it maintains some type of logical relevance for you, you need to listen to the previous shows and so forth. That's why we post these podcasts on Reclaiming the Republic. That way, you'll understand and be able to garner the concept of Republic Review, or what I refer to as a convention for Republic Review, and what that means. So, for us to reclaim the Republic, you just ask that you get more informed and consider downloading these podcasts so that you can learn all of the different content and data that I'm providing you regarding the Federalist Papers, regarding some of the authors that I've had on, like Mark Erbach so far and so forth. Anywho, if you saw my Facebook post today, I am giving away a set of books to any listener who can call in before we come back from the first break. So again, this set of books goes to anybody that can basically talk about or try to explain, you know, just try to explain to me why we have a bicameral legislation set up in this nation, and why specifically the bicameral configuration that was established in our Constitution, and why that was applied throughout the states. Because here in the state of Washington, we also have a bicameral legislation. So if you try to explain to me why we have a bicameral legislation, then I'll give you a set of books. Or if you're really good and you can basically tell me who has jurisdiction over the guarantee clause, then by all means, give me a call and a set of books is for you as well. I'm not going to limit it to just one caller. So, I mean, if we have a stack of callers, if everybody can speak to and build off of, then that's fine. I don't have just one set of books, but I am trying to stimulate involvement and action by offering a set of my books for the listeners who at least have been listening, because I have talked about bicameral Congress in the past few weeks through republicanism and a republican form of government and what that means. And so if you've been listening, or if you're kind of attuned to republicanism and our form of republicanism here in the Americas, or what the framers established within our hybrid constitutional republic, then you should be fully aware of what that means and why we have a bicameral Congress. So, moving into some local announcements. Today, where are you going? Where are you driving home? If you're driving home right now, you may want to consider stopping, turning around, and heading towards Spokane Valley. Because today at 5:30, the Northwest Grassroots Organization is doing a special on the surveillance state, which kind of, you know, is attuned to the 1984 and Brave New World and some of those types of concepts that have been, you know, put out by a lot of different authors and so forth. But the Grassroots, Northwest Grassroots, is doing their special movie night tonight, where they kind of give you all the facts and data on the surveillance state. And this is at their usual place. It's at Darcy's, and that is at 10502 East Sprague, Spokane Valley. So it's past the dealerships towards towards Liberty Lake, but it's right there where towards the end of where Sprague is kind of divided. Anyway, go to Darcy's. It's in that shopping plaza. I think it's Rosar's that's right there. And meet and greet like-minded people and get informed and get involved. These are local organizations that are here to try to help you. They're not, they need help. I mean, they need any type of help, whether that be personal, you know, financial, whatever. They can use some help, but the intent is to get people to start coalescing and working together. And these guys are doing a great service for the community as well as others. And when I get their information, I will forward that as well. I know that there is a, Rob Chase has this meeting every Friday morning, and I need to get that information, start announcing that. Because if you're interested in listening to different candidates, if you're interested in listening to issues and good conservative thought, then there you go. Some of these organizations and people are doing really good things to help inform you of one local issues, greater issues, and so forth. So there you go. Make sure you turn around or plan on heading out to Darcy's. And I want to say it's every second Wednesday of the month that the Northwest Grassroots does this out there. I'm not sure. I'm trying to develop a stronger tie with the group so I can get better information and not just tell you the day of the event, what they're doing and so forth. So anyway, give us some time. We're still growing these connections and networking. Last Saturday was the Stevens County Lincoln Day Dinner, and it was a lot of fun for those who made it. For those who didn't, well, you really missed out. The speakers were great. The Kathy McMorris Rogers was there, and she kind of spoke about what she was doing and how she's fighting for us. It was a lot of stumping, and as a matter of fact, most of the politicians were doing what you'd expect a politician to do, tell you how they're fighting for you and so forth. But it was a non-protest. I mean, I think I saw some protesters out front, but they weren't yelling and they weren't foaming at the mouth. They did look, I wouldn't say professionally organized, but they didn't look unorganized. So, you know, somebody all the way up in Colville that's being active in trying to protest these types of things, I just find it interesting and or sad, because they don't have anything better to do to propagate their great ideas, because they don't have any other than just, you know, protesting. And remember how the word used to be that the Republicans were the party of no? Well, you know, it's not like you see really good growth ideas or community growth concepts coming out of progressives, because they're not pro-growth. They're pro-constriction. They're pro government taking over, nationalizing stuff and controlling stuff, regulating things down so that you can't open up a lemonade stand in your neighborhood with your daughter or son or what have you. You can't be the, you know, off the cuff entrepreneur. So anyway, I had a lot of fun. I was, I enjoyed the speeches. But the great part about it is you get to bid for your desserts. I like that, because, you know, you can, you know, go for the gusto and the one that you really want, whether that be a cheesecake or what have you. And you can just, you know, hunker down and bid away. And it's all for a good cause, because all that money goes to supporting the local GOP party and the party chair kind of oversees, you know, the function itself, the speakers, the proceeds, and all of that. But this coming June 3rd is the Spokane County Lincoln Day Dinner. And I'm not sure if you've got your tickets yet, but if you don't, hurry up and get them. I'm not sure if they're flying fast, but I will, like I told you last week, I'll be more attuned to this. I do know one thing, that their keynote speaker is Tomi Loren, and she was on the Blaze and quickly moving off. And I can't speak more because I hear music in my ear, which means that I am done with this segment and we'll come back with a couple of other local announcements. So if you've got a, if you've got the info, give us a call and we'll be right back. Stay tuned. Thank you. Well, our phone lines are still open, and that number to call is 844-320-4299. Since I'm still doing local announcements, if you want to call and just try to explain why we have a bicameral legislation or who has the jurisdiction over the guarantee clause, by all means, I'd be happy to take your explanation and or what have you. And for being a brave caller, I would give you a set of the books, set of my books, my best-selling books. So that being said, back onto local announcements. June 24th from 2 to 4, there will be a Spirit of America rally on, and that's June 24th on Saturday, and it's hosted by the Spirit of America Rally, Eastern Washington, North Idaho. And more details on this will be coming, but I believe this is over in Post Falls, so I'll give you all of that. But make sure you set the date, June 24th. We want a great showing of constitutional lovers, you know, patriots and supporters of liberty and sovereignty. Make sure you get out there and support this so that you can be counted as a part of those who support the Spirit of America. In addition, on June 3rd and 4th, that weekend, on Saturday and Sunday, and so forgive me, I'm going to mispronounce a lot of these names as I'm learning. The producer just identified the fact that I said Colville instead of Colville, so forgive me. There's unique ways of pronouncing stuff, and I've seen and made fun of other people who haven't necessarily went through the word or the name process. Like I remember laughing at Bill O'Reilly for mispronouncing Puyallup. And so you can laugh at me, how I mispronounce names. I'm not the best at them. But anyway, I will give this a try. On the 3rd and 4th at the Kootenai Fairgrounds in Coeur d'Alene, and I probably completely mispronounced that, but over in Coeur d'Alene at the Kootenai Fairgrounds, the North Idaho Mineral Club is going to have their annual gem, jewelry, and mineral show. So if you're looking at buying things that have an intrinsic value or an investment, because some of these things are like raw amethyst and so forth, may not be a high commodity in trade, but overall there are valuable, there's values to these and there's intrinsic values. And so if you're looking to maybe make some investments and getting a artifact for your mantle or for a bookshelf or something and go, what is that? And then you can tell them, well, it's a fossil. Anywho, going to these types of things is very interesting because you can buy stuff, and over time the cost of amethyst go up, and over time the value of these types of things actually do go up. So they are investments, but they're not like a brick of gold. That being said, last week I was talking about power generators and the genius of my wife and I, maybe more my wife than I, getting a power generator for our home when we moved up here, when we returned up here, because I grew up here. And as we were looking at getting the generator put into our home, we had actually gone through quite a few different contractors as far as getting bids and so forth. And one thing that kind of surprised me was I was already expecting a high cost for a whole house generator, because we wanted to make sure that we got a generator that could take the full load of everything that we had. And at that point, we had an electric stove, air conditioner, and so forth. And so, you know, we're looking into a high market, or I should say a high kilowatt type of generator. And we ended up having somebody come out and estimating for a 17 kilowatt or 22 kilowatt and giving us prices. And I was really amazed at how some of the contractors had treated us, and how, you know, so it was just, you know, it's business and you don't want to personalize business. But when somebody actually goes out of the way to be one, not just trustworthy, but honest and upfront and very helpful, just like Quam's watch repair, when I walked into that place and they could have easily just charged me for the battery, as I said a few weeks ago, but instead they actually just pulled out the little tab and gave me the watch, said it's no charge because we didn't have to put a battery in. They didn't even charge me for the time of doing that or checking it. And I think that is admirable and stellar, and the type of business that I like to deal with. And that's why I've mentioned several times that they are my watch repair place, because I just don't have to question whether they're going to try to take advantage of me. And it was the same thing when I was looking at all these different contracts. So I can't tell you who we didn't go with, but I can tell you who we did go with. And that we ended up landing on a Northwest company, ACI, and they came out and installed our generator, and it was just literally a godsend, because right after we had that installed, we were hit with a power outage. And we haven't had a bad power outage up here yet for a while, but I do know that they're going to be coming. And as a matter of fact, I do know that kids are starting to learn, anarchists are learning, that Mylar balloons can take down a part of the grid. And all you've got to do is go to the right spots, put some Mylar balloons on a string, tether it up, and you've just brought down the grid. That just happened this week in Portland. That happened 2 weeks ago, I think, 2 weeks ago down in San Bernardino in California. This is becoming a... because everybody's been talking about the vulnerability of the grid and so forth, this is becoming a real problem. And so as I was working with the ACI, and we were looking for a long time in getting a backup generator at our previous home. And before we got up here, we said, that's it, we're going to do it, because we just can't take the change in our schedule and the impacts of not being able to have a hot shower, not being able to have electricity in the morning when you don't have a lot of light, to be able to get ready, go to work and doing things. And because we just didn't want those types of inconveniences, we felt that having this kind of appliance in our home was that important. So anyway, long story short, we're very happy with the results that we got, but we had to really take a lot of time in doing this, because I will tell you that there was a huge, a huge broad spectrum of costs and schedule availability and so forth when we were looking to getting this done. And so I do know that in the near future, and I've talked about this, that the more and more outages are going to be coming, whether that be by the hands of anarchists and these little people that like to see their hardy work like an arson starting a fire. They like to see their work and impacting people, and whether they're because there's been cases where people have shot at the grid, and other cases of, you know, people doing nefarious things. So there's that, as well as the fact that the government has nationalized our grid. I'm just giving you fair warning that you really may want to consider that the next appliance you buy for your home will be a backup generator. So we actually had been working with, and long time coming, but trying to figure out how to, you know, create a marketing product and the ability to help them, as well as them helping the show. So we'll be, you know, providing advertising spots, and hopefully we'll be able to do some remotes and so forth with these guys. But I am just here to tell you that I believe the home generators, because of the lack of reliability and what we're going to have to go through because of the antiquated grid system that we have, more and more people will recognize the value in not wanting to have that, you know, 2 day or even a couple of hours impact of not having electricity when you need to be able to do something, especially for those millennials that are home telecommuting and working out of their home and so forth. Not just millennials, but many other people. Anyway, so where are we? We are looking at wrapping up this segment, and I know that we left this open for a caller if you want to call and to talk about and try to tell me about the bicameral legislation and why we have it. And so we don't have a caller in yet, so I'm going to go to break. If I don't have a caller, I'm going to tell you why we have a bicameral legislation and the guarantee clause and so forth, and then we'll move into the Federalist Papers. So stay tuned. We will be right back. All right, so maybe our phones aren't working and you're just sitting in the car, just redialing. I apologize if you're trying to dial in and you couldn't, but let's move on. Let's bury this bicameral. And let me explain to you, as I've said a few times, but maybe it hasn't connected. The reason we have bicameral legislation is that the framers recognized that we actually had multi-sovereigns. In England, they have two houses. There's the House of Commons, House of the People, and the House of Lords. Now, the House of Lords was more of an aristocracy where there were, you know, land barons or what have you. It was not designed to recognize the sovereignty of the land space or the local government. In America, we have counties, and we also have a couple, I think one state at least, that has parishes and instead of counties. And so each state is subdivided by the sub-government organizations, counties. And the counties have a seat, and they have an executive, and they have a legislative, their councilmen, and so forth. And so what they did in the evolution of our American Republican form of government was they created bicameral legislation to ensure representation of the people and representation of the land or the local, the common denominator government of the republic, which at the national level is the states. And in the state level, it's the counties. And the reason that they recognized this locale as a sovereign was because the people that live within the county, the people that live within the states, have surrendered certain privileges or what have you to have government perform certain functions. In those days, they surrendered to the church because the states actually had a sponsored church religion, and that church performed the education, they performed health care, they performed services within the state. And that's why they took taxes from people and gave that to the state-sponsored church. Eventually, they gave that up. But I'm here to tell you, if you look at the macro, and you know, hindsight being 2020, it was a huge mistake for the states to get rid of the church or local religion's roles and responsibilities within their communities. And we can go into this later. It's not what, you know, I want to delve into now, but I have kind of talked about this when I had Mark Erbach on, and we'll talk even more about this. But because we have secularized and removed the church from very key roles and responsibilities, that's one of the big problems that we're dealing with today. And if we want to fix it, we're going to have to bring them back. And we'll have to bring them back in a 21st century type of way, where we don't necessarily have a state-sponsored church and, you know, the church dictate, you know, single church dictates certain things and so forth. But there are ways to bring back and create a symbiotic relationship between the church and communities and the people within the state and so forth, and take that back and away from the secular state and so forth. Anyway, so the reason we have a bicameral Congress, just to close on this, is because we have multiple sovereigns. We have two identified constituents within a given government. Within the state, the two constituents are the people of the county and the county itself. And so if you don't like what's going on in your county, you replace those commissioners, you replace that sheriff, you replace those people if you don't like what's going on. And so that's how you have your voice in your county. And then in the state, you have your voice in the state legislature as well. So you vote for your state representative. The counties are supposed to appoint their own senator to give them voice within the body of senators in the state legislation. So you have the Senate and then the House of Representatives, or I think it's the representatives in the state of Washington. I think they call them a house, but anyway, they're just known as representatives. They're not congressmen. That being said, there are two separate roles because that body of legislatures for the counties are supposed to ensure that the state's not passing any laws that is a disadvantage to them, where they're giving an advantage to a couple of other counties within the state. So everybody else is paying at the behest of these other counties who are trying to basically steal from Peter to pay Paul. Does that happen here? Absolutely. It happens here all the time. When King County, Pierce County, and some of these big bloated counties over on the west side want to dictate, you know, we need more money for infrastructure and so forth, well, they try to pass that on to us. Well, sorry, you know, we're a Republican form as well, and you pass that on to your own constituents. Don't try to burden us with your stupid progressive policies and the outcome of those bad policies and decisions you've made. That being said, if we return back to a true bicameral legislation where the counties actually had and appointed their voices in the Senate, we would not have the legislative nightmares that we're dealing with today. Yeah, we wouldn't have a bunch of politicians campaigning. What we would have are people that would be appointed by the county commissioners to basically go and represent them and to ensure legislation is not creating economic and or individual disadvantages where we're surrendering our liberties and so forth. And it would force us to be more cognizant of republicanism. But instead, the way we have it today, we just, you know, vote for our own representations. And it kind of goes down that that cycle of democracy that Tytler had exerted back in the 1700s, that whenever you have a democracy where people can vote for whatever it is they want, then you will find that that democracy is on a cycle or a path of destruction, because eventually the people will realize that they can start creating advantages from the public purse and giving them welfare and so forth and creating these progressive programs that are literally only designed to collapse and destroy the democracy at hand and create a totalitarian type of state or a statist communist type of state. Anywho, the other question that I had was, who has the jurisdiction over the guarantee clause, which is Article 4, Section 4, that the United States guarantees that every state be Republican form government. And I paraphrase that a little bit, but who has that jurisdiction? Anybody? Bueller? The guarantee clause oversight and jurisdiction falls under Congress. It does not fall under the Supreme Court because this is a political position. Guaranteeing a Republican form of government is a political position. It is not a legal position. It is dictated by the Constitution and by Congress to determine what and how to implement that Republican form of government. So why is this important? Because with a true Republican form within Congress, from both the House and the Senate, with the majority, and with a Republican president, they could actually come out with legislation that basically says, if you are a bicameral, or if you are a Republican form state, In other words, if you have a county or a parish, which all of us do, then you are required to acknowledge and ensure representation of your states that, or I should say your counties, and ensure that those counties have a voice within legislation, not by popular vote, but by, unless you have a constitutional amendment within, and actually, even if there's a constitutional amendment at the state level, it would still be a violation of the U.S. Constitution if it is not in congruent or in harmony with what the federal government is dictating. This is one thing that the federal government can dictate and not allow states to slide towards democracy. Because what happens is the states create these gerrymandering cases where they start forming little blobs of population so that they can get their end results for a particular party's advantage and what have you. Well, there's no party advantages in counties. Those lines are very defined, and they're defined by rivers, they're defined by engineers and so forth. And those county lines dictate what that seat of government is. It's not by, you know, how, what their demographics or how many people live on this side and that side, so we can skew the population. And today we have senators that are representing five counties. One senator represents that is unfathomable. It's unconscionable. Why are we allowing our voice to be marginalized at the counties is just beyond me. We're going into a break. And so please stay tuned, and we will be right back after this. Okay, so I was speaking of gerrymandering and sovereignty and bicameral legislation and republicanism, and to try to close this out, states are getting away with gerrymandering. As I said, there are five counties locally in Legislative District 7 that has one senator that's supposed to represent the disparate needs of five different counties. There's just no way. There's no way one person, he has to constantly compromise of what he thinks is best between, or she in this particular case, because Legislative District Number 7 is Shelley Short. And there's just no way Shelley Short can appropriately speak for five independent sovereigns that have disparate needs and requirements. And so the county should be upset, not with Shelley, but the fact that they have lost their voice. Shelley should probably be representing the county where she resides, and these other counties should have their own senators. We have 40 counties, and there should be 40 seats within the Washington State Senate that represents the 40 counties. And it's just that simple. States do not allow the federal government to gerrymander their population. If you look at Wyoming has one legislator. Technically, if the progressives got their way, they would say, well, what we want to do is we want to make sure that, you know, we break this down accordingly. So we want to gerrymander Montana, Wyoming, and the Dakotas into a single legislature so that, you know, we don't, you know, that way we can get more for the state of California. No. We are a republic, and those states are allocated and guaranteed in Article 1 that they will have a minimum of. And that's the same thing in these state constitutions, that each county should be guaranteed a minimum of one senator and a minimum of one representative if you're a low population county. If you're a high population county, then it is apportioned by how many people you do have. And so I know it would force politicians to do math, but let's give them a headache. Let's get all the counties in the state of Washington to sue in Congress, to go to Congress and petition, and let's get every state in the union petitioning Congress to demand their voice back within their state, and to demand that Congress fulfill Article 4, Section 4 of the Constitution, and force these states in recognizing a Republican form of government per the Constitution. And if they have violations of the Constitution within their state constitutions, then they should be stricken. And, you know, compliance is mandatory when it comes to the Constitution. I'm expecting the federal government to be compliant, and I'm expecting the states to be compliant. You can't have it both ways. You can't, well, we'll let that go and we'll do this. No, you can't. The Constitution is a contract, and the federal government needs to live by it, and the states need to live by it. There is a process to change it if you're not happy with it. It's called the Article 5, and I'd be happy to go through that even more if I haven't already, and I will go through that more. But the process of changing the contract is very simple. And so it's in the Article 5 of the Constitution where we amend the Constitution. And the genius of what the framers gave us made it very hard, if not impossible, for progressives and nefarious politicians and lawyers from being able to undermine this constitutional republic. However, as I was just explaining to the producer just a couple minutes ago, during the break, that the reason we're in this mess, the reason that Nebraska is a unicameral legislation and they have counties where they're strictly violating the Constitution as far as the American Republican form of government and not recognizing those sovereign counties. But the reason these things happen is because people like John Marshall and Supreme Court jurists got away with bullying people because nobody was reading the Federalist Papers. Who had access to the internet to pull in the ratification debates? Who had access to all of these source documents and all of these founding documents that are necessary to really comprehend what type of government we have and what that Constitution means and so forth? So the problem was when states were coming into the Republic, it's not like they were a huge printing press in D.C. Okay, here are all the ratification debates. So you know what the Constitution means. This is what all the states agreed upon, that the Constitution meant this, and it didn't allow us to do these things. Because had the federal government done that, then they would have been basically, you know, playing against their own hand, because their hand was saying, we can do whatever we want to do. We're supreme. We have the supremacy, and we can do whatever we believe is necessary and proper. So they've been building and self-aggrandizing themselves into this position. And that's why there's literally no more boundaries as far as they're concerned. And the whole point of this show is to teach you that there are severe boundaries. It's a contract, and we can force them back into the framework of this contract. All we have to do is exert our authority. And that authority resides here within the Republic, within the states. And it starts at a local level. That's why we're doing it here. And I'm hoping to get this show into every county in this state and to spread this show into every county within the Republic, so that all counties are speaking out for their voice, for their sovereignty. And if we do that, just imagine, and I notice I'm running out of time, so I won't get into the Federalist Papers today. I'm sorry, I didn't realize I was going to rant today. But if we could, you know, look at the grand prize here, and we could get Trump and Congress to force Article 4, Section 4, back into the states so that the states are Republican in form and we move away from this democracy crud, we could actually repeal the 17th Amendment without even having a convention. Basically, we could get a consensus among the states. And I've actually talked to several constitutionalists about this. All we would need is 38 states to write and, you know, come up with a single line that repeals the 17th Amendment, that the states, you know, no longer, or that senators are no longer elected by the people. And I'll get into this probably next week and why this is so dangerous in allowing people to vote for their senators or having them in a general election instead of having them appointed by state legislatures. And why that was so brilliant of Madison and Sherman and the framers during the Constitutional Convention in having appointed representation of the sovereigns, that separate constituent other than the people, which were the states within our republic. That being said, we could repeal the 17th Amendment rather quickly. we could take back our state legislation, including county oversight, and not have to succumb to mob rules and being subjugated by these large metropolises that are dictating everything. Our republic was never designed to, you know, these small cities and counties and rural areas to have to serve the big cities. It's nice. Who wouldn't want to be served? Who wouldn't want to be a king? But that, do you really want to be a tyrant? Do you really want to be an unjust person? Because that's exactly what happens. And look what's going on. It's mayhem in Seattle and Portland and these big cities because they are completely out of check. They truly believe that they can weigh in and literally demand that they get what they want. LA, New York, so forth and so on. And the reality is that the heartland, the counties and these flyover states and flyover counties have a voice, and they can keep them in check and go, you know what, live within your boundaries, live within your, you know, your revenues and your paycheck. We cannot afford to go bankrupt because you want to spend more money and handouts and so forth. Anyway, we can permanently change the makeup and focus of the U.S. Senate so that we don't have to worry anymore about their swing to mob rule like I started this whole process on weeks ago, or even allowing them to swing towards a simple democratic structure, or allowing the influence of special interests anymore within that state Senate if we go back to states appointing their senators. Instead, these senators are shills for the lobbyists' agenda, the progressives' agenda, the globalists' agenda, because they're the ones that are paying for their big election campaign funds and so forth. How is it that Cantwell had millions of dollars and her challenger here could, I don't even think, had $1 million? Why such a disparity? Because most of that money is coming from out of state to keep her in office, to keep the globalist agenda moving forward. We got to take this back. We have to reclaim the republic, and this is the show that's doing it. This is Reclaiming the Republic. I'm G.R. Mobley. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week. Hope you stay tuned.